From Springfield, this is State Week, a program of analysis and commentary on the events that made news this past week in Illinois state government and politics.
Illinois has surpassed 2 million COVID-19 infections since the pandemic began. The milestone comes as the state is reporting the largest single-day number of new COVID cases ever at nearly 16,600. The number of COVID patients in Illinois hospitals has nearly quadrupled in the past 8 weeks.
CVS and Walgreens are now limiting the number of at-home COVID tests customers can purchase due to the demand and surge for those tests. At Walgreens, people are only allowed to purchase 4 boxes per person, while at CVS, there's a limit of 6 test kits per customer. The problem now is finding them.
The city of Chicago and now suburban Cook County will be mandating that people show proof of vaccination to get into restaurants, bars, and gyms beginning the first week in January.
We're nearing a period that is usually quiet in state government, but the Omicron variant, rising COVID cases and hospitalizations, well, there's a lot of concern as we head into the winter and a new year. We also heard from the Illinois State Capitol architect, Andrea Aggert, about a big project coming up. We'll discuss that and more on State Week. I'm Sean Crawford in Springfield. Our panel includes Charlie Wheeler, emeritus professor and former director of the Public Affairs Reporting Program at the University of Illinois Springfield. Charlie's also been a longtime Statehouse reporter and observer. Also with us, Hannah Meisel, NPR Illinois Statehouse editor. And joining us today, we have Brendan Moore, the state government reporter for Lee Enterprises. Brendan, thanks for taking time to be with us again.
Thanks for having me on, guys.
Hannah, COVID surging again. We thought just a few weeks ago that maybe we had seen the worst, but now hospitals again looking to be overrun. We haven't heard a whole lot from the state this week, so where do things stand?
Yeah, we are seeing, I feel like I've lost words for, you know, talking about the magnitude of this, but we are for sure seeing an Omicron-driven surge. And of course, the Omicron variant is even more contagious than, you know, the Delta variant, which was even more contagious than the UK variant, which was even more contagious than the original variant. It's just, it's mind-boggling, and it's really hard to comprehend. And I, you know, I'm sure that a lot of people are feeling a lot of whiplash because, you know, just a few weeks ago, we were talking about how safe things, you know, seem to be. And then along comes this Omicron variant, and the jury is still kind of out on whether it is, does or does not cause, you know, less severe illness. But, you know, we have seen a whole week of, you know, records. And so right as we were taping this on Thursday afternoon, we just had another record-breaking day of new cases, you know, almost 19,000 new COVID cases reported today in Illinois. And, you know, obviously we are testing more now than at any point during the pandemic. But despite the kind of suppressory effects of testing a lot of people that would, you know, be pretty much healthy, we're still seeing a really sharp rise in the overall positivity rate. So it's striking. And obviously, you know, hospitalizations going up too. We've seen hospitalizations both overall and then new admits of COVID patients to Illinois hospitals quadrupling in the last 8 weeks. And of course, a lot of that growth, most of that growth has come just in the last few weeks. And, you know, as we talked about before, when we saw that Delta surge back in August, September, especially in Southern Illinois, when that region temporarily ran out of ICU beds, there is a danger. You know, I'm looking at the Illinois Department of Public Health's website right now on ICU bed availability, region 3, which is where Springfield is, 4 beds out of 159 ICU beds available. That is very, very few. And that's not just, you know, if you happen to come in with COVID, it's if you happen to have a heart attack or a, you know, or a car accident. It's very worrying. So to have only 2.5% of your ICU beds available across all of the hospitals in region 3 in West Central Illinois, that's really, really alarming. So, you know, and we haven't heard from Governor Pritzker or, you know, heard much from IVPH Director Nazia Zike this week. I think she had done some region-specific press conferences at the later point of last week. You know, just obviously not a great situation. Now, we are seeing some, I guess, sort of encouraging news out of South Africa, where this Omicron variant was first detected. And, you know, researchers there are saying, well, you know, we might be seeing the other side of the Omicron wave. News there is that deaths don't seem to be tracking like they have for other waves during the pandemic. But still, as we've discussed, it's still a numbers game. Even if the disease is less severe, you're still going to see a lot of death, you know, especially among the unvaccinated.
Yeah, Charlie, this is to say that it's happening at a bad time is a bit of an understatement, because people are getting together. It's the holiday season. A lot of people put off holiday visits last year because of COVID. Now many of them are vaccinated, and we're hearing a little bit of mixed advice, I think, as far as whether or not people should get together. But it's likely we will see a surge of this not only through the New Year's Day, but probably beyond that.
Yeah, I think it's virtually a certainty that we're going to see a surge because people will want to get together with their loved ones over Christmas. People will want to celebrate New Year's Eve. And even though they are vaccinated, not everyone can be vaccinated. Some people have medical problems that result in them not being good candidates for vaccination. Little kids still can't get vaccinated. And so you have this pool of people who are potentially harmed as the virus spreads. And then you have a bigger pool of the people. Now I have to pause and kind of think of some charitable way to phrase this. People who value their individual rights so dramatically that they're willing to sacrifice their health to make a point. There was a graphic that came out the other day from the Hospital Sisters Health System, which has a number of hospitals in the central Illinois area, some in Wisconsin, including St. John's here in Springfield. And they had in their institutions, they had almost 250 people hospitalized, 81% not vaccinated. They had 53 in ICU, 91% not vaccinated. They had 26 on ventilators, 96% not vaccinated. So it's the people who are not vaccinated who are putting themselves at greater risk, putting everybody else at greater risk, and the numbers are going to continue to rise. Now, we've not seen on the state level the same kind of actions that have been taken in the Chicago area. Mayor Lightfoot, for example, has put in a requirement starting in January 3rd. If you want to go to a bar, a restaurant, a music venue, a gym, anything inside, you're going to have to show proof of vaccination. And as Hannah said, we're taping this on a Thursday. Well, this morning, suburban Cook County, Tony Preckwinkle announced a similar provision for Cook County venues. You're going to have to show proof of vaccination. And so will we see that at the state level? I don't know. The mask mandate is still in place for the whole state that the governor put in, oh gosh, some time ago now. Masks in all indoor public places, unless you're eating or drinking. And I don't know what it's like up in the Chicago area, but here in the Springfield area, it's really not observed very well. I went to a couple places looking for Christmas presents, and I was appalled, to be honest. Half the people didn't have masks on. And as a matter of fact, I went to a place to get carry out dinner last night for my daughter and my grandkids, and the person who was manning the cash register didn't have a mask on. So the mandates are in place, but people just aren't taking it seriously. And the result is you're going to see, as I said before, you're going to see a huge surge. And the only potential bright spot, as Hannah suggested, is that the Omicron, which is now the vast majority of new cases, that particular variant does not appear to result in people being hospitalized for as long a period, having to be on ventilators and dying the same way the Delta variant did.
Brendan, Charlie made a good point there, the fact that these mandates are in place and we're not necessarily seeing people following them. You know, I was wondering the same thing as we talked about earlier, that the governor hadn't really made a lot of appearances this week, or we haven't seen the public health director. Normally, they've been out in front a lot. But again, what are they supposed to do? Tell people to get vaccinated, wear a mask? They've been doing that for months. I don't know what else you do at this point.
Right. I think we're seeing, especially around the country, governors, especially Democratic governors, are kind of in a political conundrum. I mean, they obviously see what's happening with hospitalizations rising, cases rising, but they're also grappling with the fact that people are exhausted. They're exhausted with all these lifestyle changes that we've seen over the past year and a half since the pandemic began. Even among their supporters, people want to see their family for Christmas. You know, they want to be able to go out and about and live their lives. And many feel, if I got the vaccine, I got the booster, then I should be able to do that. And so I think we're seeing kind of a range of responses. The governors of New York and California just reinstituted mask mandates a few weeks ago. Obviously, Governor Pritzker has had the mask mandate in effect here in Illinois for pretty much all year, I believe all year. And then you get the governor of Colorado that basically just said, a Democrat that said, well, if you're unvaccinated, well, at this point, it's kind of your own fault, because, you know, we can't shut down the state because you choose not to to get a vaccine. But I think what you're seeing too, obviously, is as Charlie said, cities like Chicago and counties like Cook County are going a bit further and requiring proof of vaccination to go to certain places, go to a restaurant or to a bar. You know, New York City implemented that this summer. So I guess the hope is that that will maybe help stem the tide. But as was said, it's kind of a problem when, you know, you institute these mandates, whether it's a mask mandate or proof of vaccination, and people just don't follow it, or businesses don't follow it, or in many cases, especially whether it's, you know, upstate New York or downstate Illinois or, you know, rural parts of any state, local officials, you know, choosing to enforce those mandates. You know, I live in Springfield as well, and I can tell you compliance has gone down quite a bit in the past few months, which I think is troubling for anybody who's seen the case numbers rise as they have.
Before we leave this topic, Hannah, I want to go back to the fact of what Lori Lightfoot, Tony Preckwinkle talking about putting this vaccine mandate now in place as far as attending certain venues. We also have seen now the couple of universities out there are saying, you know, we're going to go online to start the spring semester, which usually starts in January.
It's hard to predict the future, as we've seen, you know, the entire course of this pandemic. But I wouldn't be surprised if more universities decide to do online start to the, you know, spring semester. The Pritzker administration has kind of empowered local school districts to make decisions about whether they want to do online, you know, any sort of remote. And obviously, that's also a challenge for a lot of rural districts because they don't have the broadband capacity. You know, there's a lot of emphasis in the public health arena about, you know, test to stay policies. And that's been, you know, a policy that the Pritzker administration has gotten behind and also kind of tweaked as this fall semester has gone on. They've, I think, at least made one update, if not a couple, to make sure that kids and also teachers and staff aren't missing more school than they have to, because we've seen the detrimental effects, not just on learning loss, but just a kid's overall mental health and, you know, their social emotional health. When they miss a lot of school and they have to do it online, it's just not the same. you know, the governor has been very, very reticent to do kind of anything. The last things that he announced, you know, we had briefly had, I don't know, like a month, month and a half where our statewide indoor mask mandate had been kind of taken away. And, you know, in August, the governor announced the mask mandate was back in place. Plus, you know, of course, had to, you know, mandatory vaccinations for school staff and, you know, other public employees. But other than that, I mean, yeah, we haven't had capacity limits anywhere since we got to the governor's, you know, so-called phase five. Obviously, it is a tragedy for the people who are healthcare workers who have just been completely exhausted. And I think that word is even an understatement. But, you know, hopefully what we've seen in South Africa will be a model. It'll obviously be a horrible surge and it will be not fun. And especially for the unvaccinated, it'll continue to be tragic, but hopefully a short surge and we'll get out of the other side of it soon. But we don't know what lies beyond Omicron.
We don't know what lies beyond Omicron. And that's the big fear. We may be lucky and have dodged a bullet. Omicron may spread like the Dickens, but it may be relatively mild compared to Delta, Alpha, or the original one. What about further on down the line? This virus continues to mutate, and chances are at some point there's going to be a mutation. Maybe it's going to be Theta, maybe it's going to be Omega, that is widely infectious and resistant to the current vaccines that we have and more virulent. And that is the big fear. And that's a fear that people that don't get vaccinated are exacerbating, because they're basically walking incubators for the virus as it continues to mutate. So, you know, you might say, I don't have to get vaccinated, that's my right. But on the other hand, is it your right to jeopardize the health of your fellow citizens?
Well, it may not matter to a lot of people when it comes to a Capitol renovation, unless you work there or visit the State House. But there is a big project that is in the works, going to be happening soon. Brendan, what exactly is being planned for the State House?
Yeah, so this is a major renovation of the north wing of the Capitol complex. I believe the price tag is about $224 million. It's being paid for by the Rebuild Illinois Capital Construction Program. Basically, it would do away with the, there's currently a drive up to the north wing. There's some parking spots and allows for, you know, reps and folks working in the Capitol to be dropped off. So that's going to go away. And it's going to be replaced by a new entrance that's supposed to enhance security. Basically, it's going to be the entryway for any folks that don't have a badge because they work in the Capitol. It'll also include an underground parking garage and underground conference center space. So there's a lot to this, and it's going to be a multi-year project. It's going to cause some upheaval for us reporters, at least on the print side. We're being moved out of our basement press offices in April. So we have to move over to the Stratton Building, which is behind the Capitol. And then the Senate is going to have to hold their sessions in the Howlett Building for two regular sessions and three veto sessions as the work is done. So it is, it's going to be a major project and with the idea of enhancing security, adding some more space for conferences and things of that nature. And also to enhance the, to bring back some of the historic touches to the Capitol. There was mention of how there's been some additions over the years that basically took away some of the historic, what was intended by the initial architects of the Capitol. So they're going to try and return some history to the building, if you will, removed some of the recessed ceilings and mezzanines that have been added over the years.
Yeah, Charlie, you followed, you've been working at the Capitol for decades, and you followed the projects that have come along since. And we're talking about a nearly 150-year-old building, so changes always have to be made, but this seems like a pretty big one.
Yeah, and I would say the most significant one is the elimination of the north drive to the Capitol. You could basically pull in off 2nd Street, drive up past the north entrance, exit on the Spring Street and go your way. And it does present a safety problem. Now, back in the day, we didn't have the kind of worries that we do now. And so anybody and their brother could just drive through there and it wasn't a big deal. And in fact, this is going to date myself quite a lot, but I remember my first visit to the Capitol. It was in the late 50s and it was a weekend. And you could just walk in the building. You could walk all over. I wandered up the stairs up to the 6th floor on the Senate side. And there was nobody there to stop you. Nobody said anything. No security, no nothing. And compare that to what it is today, where you have to go through the metal detector if you're not a state employee, where you have to get checked in and everything. And again, having that driveway right there, if somebody wanted to come up, some terrorist with the driveway, it made it very easy for them. So I think that's a big improvement. And the area where visitors will come, it will be sort of like an outer lobby where they will be screened and have their bags checked and everything before they actually are admitted into the historic building itself. And the idea of trying to restore the Capitol to what it looked like back in the day when it was first built, really dovetails with the notion of historic preservation. So I think it's worthwhile. It's going to cost a lot of money. As Brendan said, the estimate is for $224 million. And it's going to require basically a lot of people to adjust, because on the North Wing is also where a lot of senators have their offices. So they're going to have to maybe move. And I don't know what's going to happen. Some of the governor's offices are on the North Wing. I believe the state comptroller's offices are on the North Wing. I don't know if those folks are going to have to relocate, because I'm not sure whether the renovations are going to go beyond the ground level in the first floor, if they're going to go up to the 2nd floor or the 3rd floor. I guess they will if they're doing the Senate. So there's going to be a lot of disruption. But the result, I think, is going to be something that is more historically correct, accurate, more beautiful than what we have today, and a lot safer without that drive that's accessible to anybody.
Well, just about a minute left here, and Brendan, wanted to ask you, because you've been following closely the Congressman Rodney Davis, who's now announced, of course, that he is going to run in a newly drawn district, what will be the 15th congressional district in the state, the Republican Rodney Davis. But we still don't know when it comes to what Mary Miller might do. She could run against him and challenge him in a primary. She could challenge Mike Bost. She hasn't really made a decision yet, I guess.
Yeah, Mary Miller has told reporters in Washington that she plans to run for re-election, just has not shared what district she plans to run in. And she really only has two choices, as you alluded to, Sean. Either run in the district she was drawn into with Mike Bost, or run against Rodney Davis. On Monday, I was in Charleston on the campus of Eastern Illinois University talking to Representative Davis. He was in the area talking to EIU leaders and local folks in Coles County. And I don't think that was a coincidence. As many listening probably know, Mary Miller lives in Coles County. She lives about 15 miles away from the campus. It's currently in her district. And although Congressman Davis did not say anything explicitly against his colleague, he did say that he did make sure to mention that he's the only person that lives in the district currently, that seniority matters. He's in line to chair a House committee if the Republicans take the majority next year. Mary Miller is obviously a freshman. And he was not shy about touting his ties to former President Trump. Not that he ever, ran away necessarily running in his district now, which is a little bit more moderate, but he was definitely playing it up more than maybe he would in the past. So clearly, Representative Miller has a decision to make, as Congressman Davis told me. But in the meantime, he is certainly trying to secure his position and his standing in his new district.
All right. Well, time now for our notes from the field. Hannah, let's go to you first.
Well, Senate Majority Leader Kim Lightford had a very scary encounter this week. She and her husband were carjacked in Chicago, near West Chicago suburb of Broadview. You know, obviously just a terrifying situation. They are physically okay. They had a Mercedes loaner car that they had, gotten while their vehicle was in the shop, stolen from them. And her husband, who is a concealed carry holder, fired shots back at the carjackers. So obviously a very scary situation, and we wish her the best.
Brendan?
Nikki Budzinski, who is a former staffer to Governor Pritzker and President Biden, and is currently running for Congress in the Illinois 13th Congressional District, which is in central Illinois, received the endorsement of Tammy Duckworth this week. It's just another one in a line of major endorsements that she's received. Senator Durbin endorsed her last month. She has basically all the major labor unions and significant support in the district. It's kind of an impressive showing for a first-time candidate, even one with significant ties to state and federal government. She has one primary challenger. And again, I was talking to Rodney Davis earlier this week, and he assured me there will be a strong Republican challenger in the 13th next year. So it'll be interesting to see how that race develops.
Okay. And Charlie.
Jesse White, our Secretary of State, announced this week that the expiration dates for driver's licenses and ID cards have been extended an additional 3 months to the end of March, March 31st, 2022. It doesn't apply to CDLs, commercial driver's licenses, or learner's permits, but it will enable people to avoid having to try and go in and take the tests or show up at one of the Secretary of State's office under the COVID, situation. The law under which the Secretary of State is issuing this extension was just signed by Governor Pritzker a couple of weeks ago. It passed in the fall session of the General Assembly. It gave him authority to extend driver's license and ID card expiration dates to December 31st of next year, so for a full year. But he said that this 3 month extension is going to be the last one. And of course, even if your license would expire during this time and it's automatically extended, of course, you will have to pay the renewal fee, although there won't be any late filing fees or penalties.
All right. Well, that's all the time we have for this episode of State Week. Our panel included Charlie Wheeler, Hannah Meisel, and the Lee Enterprises Statehouse reporter, Brendan Moore. You can get a podcast of our show at nprillinois.org through the NPR One app or iTunes. Just look for State Week and join us next time. I'm Sean Crawford.
You've been listening to State Week, a program of commentary and analysis of events in Illinois state politics and government. State Week is produced in the state capital by public radio station NPR Illinois. This is IPR, Illinois Public Radio.